This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
This is a great question. How do teachers look at my kid and say, your kiddo might have ADHD? And then how does a teacher, we're going to take it one step further, approach a parent and talk to a parent about it? Today we have Dominique Paterano, and Dominique is more affectionately called Dr. P by her families that she works with. Dr. P has been helping students achieve their academic dreams for 27 years. After teaching history and social studies full-time at several elite New York high schools, she founded Crimson Coaching in 2014. To work one-on-one with students prepping for standardized tests like the SAT and ACT. Striving to master academic content and executive function skills in high school and applying to college and scholarships. Unlike many other tutoring companies which leave the tutoring to recent college grads, Dr. P does 98% of Crimson Coaching's tutoring and coaching herself. She also is an adjunct professor of historical studies at Empire State University, part of the State University of New York, and currently Dr. P is at work on a how-to book tentatively titled Writing College Essays That Work. Welcome to the show, Dr. P. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
I just want to say, looking at your bio and just the little bit that we talked, you and I have a lot in common as far as education and where we feel like it's coming from. One of the things that you talked about wanting to discuss, and I think is a great topic, is how to identify a student with ADHD. And so this is a great question. How do teachers look at my kid and say, your kiddo might have ADHD? And then how does a teacher, we're going to take it one step further, approach a parent and talk to a parent about it?
Thanks for this question. It is the first time I ever unofficially diagnosed a student with ADHD. And I say unofficial because even though I do have a PhD, and that's where the doctor comes from, I'm not a neuropsychiatrist, and they are really the only ones who can give an official diagnosis. So I want to be like super clear about that. But at that point in my career, it was sort of, I'd been teaching for at least 20 years at that point. So I, you know, had hundreds of students, right, that I had come across, and I sort of knew what sort of how long a student of that age and gender might be able to focus for. And it just so happened that this student that I was tutoring at the time was a 12-year-old boy. And anybody who's ever worked with or had a 12-year-old boy knows that sometimes their attention span isn't super long to begin with, right? But I was working with this student one-on-one for an exam for private high school admissions. And we really had to stop, I would say, every 15 to 20 minutes. We would go out of the room we were working in and either do some exercises or throw a ball around, and then we would go back and work and so on and so forth. So after about three times, it was a single dad. I kind of called up the dad and I said, you know, I love working with your son. He's really a great kid. And I was wondering, did you ever think if he might have ADHD. Now, you know, when we talk about talking with parents, I approached it very gingerly. You know, after I had worked with the student for three times one-on-one, I think what teachers shouldn't do is just make a, you know, or tutors make a blanket statement after just once, right? Because everybody might have an off day. A student might not be like that all the time, right? And this dad told me, well, you know, actually his teacher told me that she thought the same thing, but I didn't really pay attention to her because she's only 24 and she's got 30 kids in the class. So I said, well, I'm 44 and I am only working one-on-one with your son. And look, you might want to look into it. Well, 6 months later, he had me over for a little soiree at his home, and he took me aside and he said, I just want to thank you for changing my family's life. I got my child tested. He does have ADHD, and he's on a different diet and exercise regimen, and he's taking medicine now, and our whole family dynamic is completely changed. Yeah. And none of the other times have been as dramatic, but some of the other like signs, you know, I once had a 16-year-old girl who got in a 60-question exam section, part of an exam. The first 40 were almost completely 100% right. And the last 20 were really very a lot wrong. Now, most standardized tests in the high school get harder as you go along. So there is that caveat, but it was really astounding, the real break. And that suggested to me that she was also losing focus about two-thirds of the way into the test. Now, she never presented like this other boy as unable to focus. She was a 16-year-old girl, not a 12-year-old boy. She didn't have to get up. We didn't have to play. This was over Zoom anyway. We didn't have to play ball games in the middle of a session, so on and so forth. So I think her ADHD could easily fall through a teacher's radar because in class, she's quite attentive. And if you're not really looking at which questions, where in the test she's getting wrong answers, you might just say, oh, she's about an 80% student, no problem, you know, and it might not ever, you know, set off any alarms. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, look, I'll be frank, you know, most public school teachers don't, and even private school teachers don't have the time to go through every single child's test to look at that sort of thing. But as a parent, if you suspect anything, you might want to go through your child's test. And for example, if they're getting, you know, the last half mainly wrong, that's probably suggesting some sort of attention problem. So that's just two of the kind of extremes of signs that children might have ADHD.
So when I hear that, though, we have to be really careful as teachers in public schools mentioning that we think your child may have ADHD because of all kinds of other legal things that go with that. So I always like recommend that, you know, I ask when I would have families like that and I'd have some suspicions, I'd say, have you mentioned some of these behaviors to your family doctor? Rather than suggesting a diagnosis. Because if they do have ADHD and they bring those behaviors to the doctor, they're going to go, let's maybe look at this. So that's just a caveat because it's different in different places. And some teachers could get themselves into all kinds of trouble.
Yes, and I don't want to get any teacher in trouble. I mean, to be fair, these, you know, unofficial diagnoses, and so far I'm 6 for 6. I've, you know, mentioned 6 times to 6 different sets of parents that I thought maybe their child had ADHD, and it turned out that I was correct after they brought the child for testing. But this is a tutoring situation. So I'm not sort of bound by the same legal prohibitions. And in addition, you know, I'll be frank, there is some, not that there's an incentive, I would never falsely, you know, suggest, but when a student does get a positive diagnosis of ADHD, they often get accommodations that allow them 50% more time on standardized tests. And so, I mean, with one student, that was a game changer in this student's score. He got over, you know, 1500 for the first time on his SAT with that extra time. Yeah. And so it's not about, you know, some parents, I have noticed like less sort of, you know, parents have never been, you know, sort of, oh, not my kid. They've been more, their reactions have been sometimes, oh, well, I don't want to feel like I'm gaming the system. And I tell them, it's not about gaming the system. If your child, you know, I'm wearing glasses right now, right? If your child needed glasses, you would never say, I don't want to get my kid glasses because I think that's going to be gaming the system, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's the same thing as glasses, or if you break your arm, you need a cast to fix the broken bone.
So I'm curious, as as a tutor helping kids get ready for the SAT and the ACT, and I was previously the accommodations coordinator for my district, so I know all about the accommodations thing. Yeah. Do you help them figure out what accommodations are most appropriate for them? Do you get into that with them, or do you just simply coach them on the tests?
Not so much. I mean, sometimes I have looked at either the neuropsych report once it comes back, to just help a family to the best of my ability. Again, my PhD is in history, so it's not even in the psychology field.
By the way, was my minor area of interest as well. So.
Nice. Just counsel them on the logistics in terms of, like, first you're going to need a neuropsych test, then you're going to need to apply to College Board and ACT with that report. And I always kind of tell them, because I've been through this process so many times, you want to start as early as possible, because you often need to wait months for the accommodations to get approved. And during that time, make sure your child is using their accommodation in school, because oftentimes the testing agencies, you know, now there's many more children with this diagnosis than even 10 years ago. And so one of the ways they're sort of winnowing down is saying, well, if this child's not using their accommodation in school, they must not really need it. And so we're not going to grant it on this high stakes test. So that would be my advice is to start early and use the accommodation in school as soon as you get it.
And then I would add to that, because, like, when I worked with these kiddos with the ADHD, some kids really benefited from the additional time. Other kids benefited more from frequent breaks, right? Because, like, with the SAT, you have to sit till the end of that extended time. And so if you finish up really quickly, you have to sit there for another hour or two or whatever it is until it's done, where frequent breaks allow you to get up and move frequently while you're testing. So sometimes it's one and sometimes it's the other. What would you think about that?
I agree. I would say, though, luckily, last year for the SAT and this year for the ACT, both tests have gotten a lot shorter, which I think is fantastic. So if you're taking just the mandatory part of the ACT, they're both 2 hours and either 14 minutes or 20 minutes for SAT and ACT respectively, as opposed to, you know, the ACT used to be 3.5 hours. So, I mean, with your extra time, then, you know, some kids were there like all day.
They were like literally until, when you say all day, we're talking until 5 o'clock at night.
Some
kids would get that kind of extended time, but you had to take the test all in one day.
Right.
Which meant you were there triple time of what other people took the test, and that you'd be out there all day.
And I always tell students, even students who don't have the accommodations, that during the breaks that they do get, I tell them, even if you don't have to go to the bathroom, I want you to get up, walk to the bathroom. They think I'm crazy. I even advise them to do jumping jacks. Because I tell them, you know, you're sitting there, you don't have any oxygen going through yourself, and it's such a mentally draining test. You need to kind of get your blood pumping again to go for the next half of the test.
So you work mostly with teens, is that right?
I do. I mean, occasionally I work with college students and even into graduate school, and occasionally I'll work with middle school students. But I would say probably 90% of the students that I do see are either 10th, 11th, or 12th grade.
And so the students that you see with tutoring, and what are some of the common things that you see with your ADHD students that they struggle with?
So as I mentioned, either focusing in person, sort of like focusing on what I'm saying, you know, they might be looking here, looking there, you know, the notifications now with the phone is a big thing. And I do all my tutoring over Zoom now since COVID. So, you know, I can tell when they're getting an email or a text, right? And I'll have to remind them to turn the notifications off. So focus, of course, is a big thing. Another big thing is organization. I have a list of when they start working with me, you know, you need to bring a pen or pencil, your notebook, you know, if the graphing calculator, if they're doing. And, you know, the kids who have executive function issues, it's kind of like all over the place, you know, and I have since gotten much more, I would say a little bit hard about, like, I had one student during COVID who constantly came to the tutoring session in his bed. And I just said, look, you can't do math in your bed. You have to sit at a desk. You know, there's no way that you're going to be able to be at your best when you're reclining.
Yeah. And, you know, like I would argue too, like wearing pajamas.
Yeah.
Get dressed.
Yes.
Get dressed. And I oftentimes on a Saturday when I'm getting ready to do my chores will put on my face, you know, because I mean business. And there are certain things that get you in a state of mind where you're going to be learning, and laying in bed in your pajamas is not really motivating.
Yeah. And I will talk to them also sometimes about the science of it. I'm a huge.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Fan of Dr. Andrew Huberman, who has a podcast. He's a neurobiologist at Stanford School of Medicine. And I've learned so much since 2021 listening to his podcast. And I would say anybody with ADHD, listen to his episodes on ADHD and focus and attention. But one thing I learned is that when our eyelids are slightly raised up, that is a signal to the brain to become alert. And when they're lowered slightly down, that is a signal to the nervous system to calm down and get sleepy. And so once I found that out, my laptop right now is propped up very high so that I can look sort of directly into the camera. But I keep, even when I'm just at my work, doing my work, so that the screen is at eye level or slightly above, because I want to stay alert. And when you're in your bed, you know, that is not a sign for your central nervous system to be alert, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's science there.
Yeah, exactly. And then finally, the last big thing is time management, you know, with a lot of students that, you know, I frequently get, and I do some sort of executive function coaching of children sometimes. And, you know, there's either missed assignments because of either organization or time management or both. Or the student will get home, play video games until 8 o'clock or do whatever until 8 o'clock. And then it's the scramble to do homework, right? Because they've lost track of that time and they don't sort of have that prefrontal lobe to say, okay, I'm only going to play, you know, that my new brand new Nintendo Stitch for, you know, for a half hour. And then I got to get to my homework. Right. So those are, I would say, organization, time management, and focus. Those are the three big things. Yeah.
So how do you work differently with a student with ADHD than a neurotypical student?
I'm often much more explicit with the student with ADHD. So when I haven't been called in to be their executive function coach, and let's say I'm just tutoring them for the SAT, I'll say, okay, what else do you have going on this week? So let's look at when you're going to do the homework that I'm assigning you, right? And so sort of help them with their time management piece. If it's the focus that's more of an issue, you know, reminding them, please turn off your notifications. You know, please keep your phone out of the room, right? And if it's the organization piece, you know, maybe checking in with them before we start the session. Do you have your notebook? Do you have your pen? Do you have your review book that we're working with, right? Just to sort of be their checklist, like a human checklist of what they need for the session.
So I'm curious, Dr. P, what brought you to what you're doing now? You've done a lot of other things. What brought you here?
You know, it's funny. My favorite game to play as a child was school. And I was always the teacher. And when somebody asked me how I started teaching, I thought back. And in first grade, I was a very early reader. I was reading before kindergarten. So by the time the other students were learning how to read in first grade, I would just finish my work so quickly and I'd be really bored. And there was another girl who couldn't read yet. And she was a real talker, and our teacher didn't like that. And so she basically said, Dominique, you teach her how to read. And in first grade, I taught another student how to read. And
You started teaching right out the gate.
I did. And then I had younger siblings. And, you know, just I was recently, or not recently, but a few years ago, I think I was at my 25th high school reunion. And a classmate came up to me and he said, "I would have failed sixth grade if it wasn't for you. You used to help me with my homework on the bus every day." And, you know, I had sort of forgotten that, but he remembered it. And so when I look back to it, you know, I always think about, oh, I started tutoring for money in college because I was going to college and needed, you know, pocket money. But really, I started tutoring actually way, way, way before that. And so when I graduated college, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I was fortunate enough to graduate from Harvard University and never really had role models in my family of going to college, let alone a college like that. And I really floundered for the first few years out of college, trying different things. And then my mom said, "Why don't you try teaching? You've always been a tutor." And I thought, huh, yeah. And I enrolled in a master's program. And the first time I set foot in front of a classroom, I went, "This is why God put me on the face of the earth. I get it now." And so I did do that for classroom teaching for 10 years. And I feel really fortunate that I did, because I really got crash course in how the teenage brain works. And when I was about 42, I just felt like, you know, I wanted a different challenge. By that point, I had left, gotten a PhD, gone back to teaching high school. And I felt like teaching history and social studies, I always joke and I say, if Rome didn't fall by October 27th, my whole year was off. So it was a grind, and it didn't change that much. And one thing I know about my brain, and this is, I don't have ADHD, but I can sympathize with students who do, in that my brain likes a lot of variety. And so I have realized that I enjoy tutoring math one day. And, you know, after I get off with you, I'll be tutoring poetry to another student. And I love that. And so I feel like, you know, Abraham Maslow, I feel self-actualized in my current, you know, owning my own business, tutoring lots of different things to lots of different students. So that's sort of how I found my way to what I'm doing now.
Absolutely. I hear a lot of things in there that are absolutely resonating with me. Really? As an ADHDer, when you said variety, you like to have a lot of variety. I was in education for over 30 years. I was the longest I was ever in a position, though, was 8.
Interesting.
So I changed positions frequently to keep that variety up. You know, I was a teacher consultant. I was a department head. I was a team teacher. I was a resource room teacher. I was like all the different things, because it kept me interested in what I was doing. But I was always, and I know you can understand this, at my heart, a teacher.
Yeah.
And still today, when I do the podcast, we're teaching. Right now, we're teaching.
Absolutely. I agree. Yes.
And I think I have little goosebumps, because I don't think that people, and I could be wrong, but I don't think people who have not been called to a profession can understand being called to a profession. And I think a lot of teachers are called to teach.
I agree. Yeah. And I also feel very fortunate, because so many people have not. You know, my dad, God bless him, was a New York City police officer. And some people are called to police work, but he I don't think that was his calling per se. And, you know, it's a struggle to do a job like that, or even a job like teaching, if you're not called to it. And so when you love what you do, it just makes every day so much easier, because with every profession, there are always going to be the things you don't like. So, for example, I still am an adjunct professor of historical studies, and I really don't enjoy grading. I find it very repetitive, you know, and it's, but it's something I have to do the other 80% of the job, which I love. Right. And so, you know, no job is ever going to be perfect. It's not vacation. That's why they call it work. Right. But yes, I feel very blessed, because it's that love for the 80% that gets me through the 20% that I don't like.
Absolutely. And then you add to that, for at least for me, like, you're working with the ones who are struggling.
Yeah.
The ones who need that little bit of extra help. Or the ones, you know, like, I need to take an SAT and an ACT, and I have to get a good enough score to get into the college that I need to. And you're seeing it now on a one-on-one level, where, you know, because I went from a classroom level to administration and totally lost touch with that and hated that. But when I went into coaching, it was that one-on-one again, and seeing those differences.
Yeah, I discovered after I founded Crimson Coaching way back in 2014 that I'm more of an introvert than an extrovert. You know, on the Myers-Briggs, I'm always sort of 50-50, but because I can be in a large group. But I also realized that when I was classroom teaching, as much as I loved it, it was very draining for me. It took a lot of energy out of me. And that's because I'm primarily an introvert. And introverts like one-on-one interaction. And I realize now that I have so much more energy because my work isn't draining to me in the same way that classroom teaching was draining.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we are coming close to the end of our time, but we're not there yet. And I always like to, right before the end, get one more really good question in. And I don't do the same question for everybody. I don't like canned things. My question for you is, if you had a 14-year-old ADHD student sitting in front of you and they said, give me the best knowledge you can give me to make me successful in high school, what would you give them?
Oh, that is really tough. But I know this is going to maybe seem a little odd, but I would say get your sleep, diet, and exercise under control. Because to me, unless you have that foundation, like, you know, a lot of people think like our brain, you know, exists sort of separately from our body, right? But one of my many hats is I'm a yoga teacher, and I really believe that, you know, of course, our brain is attached to our body. And if we're not sleeping right, which teens need as much as tiny infants need, right? They need it even more than, say, the 8-year-old. So if you're not sleeping right and you're not eating right, you're not fueling your brain for what it needs, no amount of tutoring or the greatest teachers in the world will not be able to help you. So you really need to help yourself. And many people with ADHD are able to, you know, if their ADHD isn't very severe, they can manage through diet, exercise, and sleep. And I would always recommend, especially for children, that parents try that route before the pill. Of course, some students need pills and they should be allowed to have them. But again, that pill without the sleep, diet, and exercise is not going to be able to do the job it was meant to do if those things aren't already in place. So that would actually be my, you know, number one tip.
I could not agree with you more.
Good.
So, so true. You got to take care of that with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And yeah, absolutely. And with ADHD, taking it a step further, everybody has a difficult time functioning when they're tired, when they haven't eaten, and when they, you know, haven't been exercising. But when you have ADHD, it's a double whammy. It's even worse if you're if you have those things going on. And I would even say, you know, as important as exercise is to your neurotypical peer, exercise is like it's I can't even explain how important it is.
Right. And we're going back to sort of the beginning where I talked about the student that I was getting up with and playing ball with in the middle of the tutoring session. He needed more exercise and he wasn't getting it throughout the day.
Absolutely. And that's not just hyperactivity. That's dopamine. Like, because even if you hate the activity that you're doing, any physical activity is going to give you some dopamine, right? And yeah, I swim 3 times a week. I lift weights. I do all those things because I have ADHD.
I started lifting weights as well when I turned a certain age. And yes, I'm a big proponent of that for women of certain age, but that's another podcast.
That is another podcast that I would definitely say I agree with that as well. Heavy lifting is important.
Yes, yes.
Well, I really want to thank you, Dr. P, for being on the show today. I think that we've had a great conversation. I hope you've enjoyed being here.
I have. Thank you so much, Janine. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. And I love what you're doing.
Thank
you. It's a very important service. And so many of our kids out there right now, they need that extra push. And it's just nice to have the coaching and the tutoring available to them, because you can make all of the difference. And I can't tell you how many times as a teacher I saw kids start doing tutoring, and it made a huge difference for them. So thank you so much for the work that you do.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for the work that you do. I think it's great to bring knowledge and empathy into the space through podcasting. It's wonderful.
Thank you. So for our butterflies on the wall who have been listening in, I hope that they will like, subscribe, do all the things if they like what they're hearing. And we'll see you next time.